Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, I'll just say your name and your role with the show.
Hey, my name's Josh Stamberg. I play Harry in Exclusion.
Yes, it's called Exclusion. It's going to be at the amazing, amazing arena stage there near the wharf there in Southwest DC. It's going to run now through June 25th, so get your tickets now. Hey, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I'm so impressed by your whole resume trajectory setup.
Resume trajectory. I don't know where you read it, but I'll take it.
just poking around online. I like, what a cinephile. It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, when you really love something, then you just sort of go all in on it, I guess. You know what I mean?
I 100% know what you mean.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm thrilled to be here. I grew up on WTOP. This is very, very exciting for me.
You grew up on WTOP or listening to WTOP?
Listening to it. Yeah, listening.
Oh, that's funny. Ah, awesome. Well, we're glad to have you. It's going to be the best interview the station's ever had, I'm sure. Well, anyway, so, you know, you and I know what the show's about, but, you know, if someone's riding in their car and doesn't have the advantage of looking at the premise on the website, give them the basic premise of the show.
Yeah, so the setup is there's an award-winning book written on something called the Chinese Exclusion Act, a very dense history, and a Hollywood big shot, what they call a showrunner, comes in and options that book to turn it into an award-winning TV series. And it's about all of the hilarity and darkness that ensues.
I love it. And remind our listeners really quick, give them a quick history lesson on the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882. You know, what was the act and sort of the ramifications of it?
Basically, and I think like many Americans had never known this, but written into law in our country's books was a notion that Chinese people could be completely excluded from society here in the country where they were working and living and could be forced out. And that went on for a very, very long time up into the 1900s.
Exactly. Exactly. And yeah, a lot of people know about, you know, like Japanese internment camps, World War II, right, etc. But there, you know, a lot of people might not know about this one. And it's, you know, equally shocking. I guess it was President Chester A. Arthur.
It was shocking to learn about. I did not know. I really am embarrassed to say I didn't know anything about it, which is something that's sort of amazing about this production, is sort of shedding light on that, in addition to it just being, I think and hope, hugely entertaining and funny.
I want to get to the hugely entertaining and funny in a second, but just one more point on the shocking, horrific history of that. Like, talk about sort of tie it into how, you know, it is Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month. And so talk about, just kind of weave that in there for me about what, you know, why you're shining a light on this really, you know, horrific act that a lot of Americans should know about, but don't.
Yeah. Well, I think in addition to it being Asian American, you know, Pacific Heritage Month, it's just a piece of history that all Americans should know, given the diversity of our country and given how huge an impact the Chinese American communities had here in this country. So I think between that and sort of all of the stories that are coming to light of late, it's a perfect moment for this story.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's get into some of the more fun stuff. As you said, it's wildly entertaining. So yeah. I mean, who's the playwright? What's sort of the dialogue like? Is it snappy? You know, is it going to fly by?
Yeah, great questions. It is a very taut 90 minutes written by a brilliant playwright and screenwriter named Kenneth Lin, who wrote, many people know from House of Cards. He's written a number of great plays, another that happened at the Arena Stage a number of years ago called Kleptocracy. He's very interested in politics and social power and status. And, you know, it's just, he writes such sharp, smart dialogue. And one of the things I think and hope is most brilliant about the play is how funny he makes the history lessons. He's not just jamming it at you with, you know, here's me preaching about history you should know. He's doing it in the way that brilliant playwrights do it, by just making it hugely entertaining and laugh out loud funny, so that you can get the spoonful of medicine in there.
I love it. I love it. And who plays the main character, you know, the historian that, you know, her best-selling book about this Chinese Exclusion Act. So it's optioned for a miniseries by a Hollywood mogul.
That's right.
Who plays that lead character?
So the lead character is played by Caroline, and only done a handful of plays, honestly, something at Lincoln Center, one of Tom Stoppard's most recent plays, and holding this whole thing down every scene and just an extraordinary performer. Actually, goes by they. Sorry, they play the writer at the center of this, navigating the waters of Hollywood for the first time. A young woman from Michigan is the character who comes to Hollywood chasing the dream and ultimately achieves it. And the play really asks the question, at what cost? And how do you hold on to your soul in very turbulent waters?
Yeah, go into that a little more, you know, because it's you know, you probably this dream gig, the euphoria turns to disillusionment is how the website says it. But, you know, it's, you know, wanting to, you know, get optioned and does and is out there in Hollywood. But then why does she become disillusioned? Are there, you know, lots of studio heads meddling, wanting to change, you know, the true story? Are they questioning what really happened or, you know, I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, I don't want to say too much, but I think it's all of that. And I think it really, the play's asking big questions about ownership, ownership of history, ownership of culture, ownership of story. As, you know, this Hollywood guy, me, takes this very meaningful historical story and then figures out how to dramatize it and turn it into a hit TV series, which is a very different undertaking than making a documentary or historical drama that just is about the history. So, you know, the disillusionment comes with her sort of navigating the machinations of big time Hollywood and trying to hold on to her soul, which is, you know, I think for anybody who's been in entertainment, and I'm sure lots of other walks of life, like that's the challenge. How do you hold on to what you are and who you are and why that's meaningful to you?
I love it. Well said. And why is it fun for you to play a Hollywood mogul guy? I mean, you've done your share of screen acting. We can rattle off the amazing, impressive filmography if you want later. But you know, do you tap into an experience without any, I'm not mentioning any names, but you tap into any Hollywood suits or producers or anything that you've encountered?
Well, I've certainly over 30 years been in many, many, many of these offices, and I'm fortunate to count numbers of these sort of showrunners and studio heads as people in my life who I have friendships with. So it sort of becomes an amalgam of those people. This, what I think is most interesting about Harry is not just his success, his high status and his ambition, but really that someone with seemingly everything is still willing to grapple with what makes him tick and ask, you know, the bigger questions of himself about, is it worth it? And am I doing the right thing? And it's an unexpected lesson to learn from a novice in the form of a young, you know, historian. So it's it is a different challenge than playing, you know, the head of a universe in WandaVision or a rapscallion on The Affair or any of these other sort of very gray area characters I played in the past. This guy's different. And I love that. And I love the fact that it's a new adventure.
I love it. And you mentioned a couple there, you know, WandaVision. But I'm going to just to embarrass you for our listeners, not in a bad way, but run up, list some of these shows because seriously, folks, you've been in Spin City and Sex in the City and Law and Order.
Oh boy. Yeah, we're going back.
Speed right Under and I'm going to jump around. Grey's Anatomy and House and Arrested Development, Good Wife, Nashville, basically anything that you can you've watched over the years, you're probably in. Do you have I hate when people say, you know, what's your favorite role, but I'm going to kind of ask it. But you know what? Do you have one that stands out that you're particularly proud of when you go back and watch, or if it shows up in reruns, are you like, "Wow, that's I'm going to put that one on the reel"?
Yeah, I mean, I've been fortunate to have a lot of really exceptional experiences. I would say 6 Feet Under is way up there, as is The Affair on HBO. That was a peak experience. And, you know, got to work with a hero, Russell Crowe on The Loudest Voice, playing Bill Shine, story about Fox News. Truthfully, I'm really, really fortunate to have a lot to feel proud of. And it really is always about sort of the next role. At the moment, my favorite role is Harry in Exclusion. And that's quite a gift, to always have that optimism of what's next.
Well done. I can tell you're a pro because you always, that's how I can tell when I'm interviewing someone. They always find a way to answer the question, but then they spin it back to the show they're talking about. So you did it. But yes, everyone check out Russell Crowe was Roger Ailes and you were Bill Shine.
That's right. That's right.
Was that a Tom McCarthy? Let me look. Yeah. Well, development.
Tommy,
Yeah.
Tom developed it. Yep.
Yeah, as a spotlight fame.
Exactly.
Awesome, awesome. And real quick, you mentioned earlier that the lead performer is Caroline, goes by they. So I'll say they when I'm referring to the actor, but I can say she when I refer to the character she plays. Kate,
absolutely.
Right? Okay, Kate. Absolutely. So it's Katie, and I say she.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
All right, cool. Well, we've talked a lot about the story and the themes, and you know your illustrious career. But one thing we should say is, you know, we're a radio station, but I always love to sort of paint a visual picture with our words, if we can, of like what our listeners will see when they turn out to Arena Stage, because they always do such great work. But like, you know, what do we see in terms of like set design or costumes? I mean, is it like is it modern day, or you know what I mean? What are we seeing?
Yeah, fantastic question. It is utterly modern day. Our illustrious director, Trip Coleman, who is a Broadway hand and has directed, you know, we've worked together in the past, which is a big reason I'm here. He has brought in both local and Broadway designers who are just tip top. I mean, the design is so good. You have amazing set pieces flying in and out and moving on and off on pallets. It sort of adds to the excitement of the 90 minutes. And it is just top shelf Arena Stage quality. The crew there is amazing. Everybody just is great at their job. And I think when you watch it, it feels seamless and sort of effortless. And the story just rips. And it is a lot of ambitious story in 90 minutes. And I just have to say, as a Washington, D.C., you know, I was born and bred here. Arena Stage is the place I fell in love with it all. And it's so meaningful to come back and be able to do a show in my hometown at a place that has just such a storied history. Really, really special all around.
Oh, absolutely. And I was going to end there anyway, but thanks for segueing that anyway. Just sort of the hometown hero returns sort of thing. where exactly in D.C. did you grow up, or was it, or Maryland, Virginia? No, where exactly in the area?
Yeah, I grew up in Northwest D.C. on what I always called the less fancy DC Chevy Chase side, which I guess these days is much fancier, but back in the day was sort of everybody lived there. And
so
it was
you're on
great...
the DC side of Chevy Chase Circle, like where the Avalon Theater. What was that?
Exactly.
Was that? American City Diner used to be there.
American City Diner. Exactly. Exactly. He ran for mayor at one point, Jeffrey, I forget his last name, but he actually ran for mayor.
Right. Right. But how'd you get into theater? Was it like school productions?
It was school productions, and my mom, who is a New Yorker and sort of exceptional journalist, she dragged me to everything. My parents both did, and she had grown up around it. And over time, I just really fell in love with it. I went to a really small, great school in the district called the Murray School, where everybody kind of had to do everything. So just because you were a jock didn't mean you weren't going to do a play. And really, it was that type of participation that just that changed my life. And I was lucky to, you know, like I think many people out there, had one great teacher, not just in my mom, but at the school, who opened it up to me and opened me up to that part of me. So yeah, just a lot of good fortune.
I like how you're humbly just saying my mom was a journalist without saying she was the Susan Stamberg co-hosting NPR's All Things Considered.
Not bad. She's not bad. She's
not
bad.
Not bad. But also you said something else that sparked something for me. And I love that you said it was a school that just because you were a jock, you had to do theater arts. And, you know, I relate to that entirely because I'm covering entertainment. But, you know, I love playing football and stuff. What did you play?
Yeah, I mean, everything, because it was a small school, so I got lucky that way. But I mean, it was football, baseball, basketball, and soccer, but I ended up playing soccer in college and being in the theater conservatory. And that was a different thing there, too. And it sort of opened up both those worlds. And it really kept it, I'm sure, you know, everybody at any school thinks it's cliquey, but I think it kept it to a minimum in my high school because, again, like everyone was involved. And it wasn't like, oh, that's not cool. And so it took away a stigma that I think can be really damaging about, oh, those kids are theater nerds. It's like, well, I'm a theater nerd. And I also am going to go crush this guy in this game. You know what I mean? So there was a real freedom to that. And I do think it's rare. I do think that's a rare gift to get.
Exactly. I hate when it, and it goes both ways too, because I also hate at the same time, you know, in like a lot of, you know, shows that thankfully hold up theater kids. Then they paint the jocks as, you know, the Letterman jacket, like bullies. They're like, no, sometimes there's people that can cross both ways. You know, sometimes
completely
people, they're people. And actually, so if you're listening to this, be a Josh Stamberg and you know, do everything.
Right on, man. Right
be well-rounded.
And I do think, like, fortunately, we're living in a moment where those types of stories, we are, as Ken Lin has, delving into the gray. You know, it's not just black and white. It's not just one dimensional, but the characters I'm interested in are those guys who have or are allowed to experience all of those pieces of strength and vulnerability. I think that's the way we change stuff out there. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, I mean, I guess you've kind of talked about your younger days. Do you remember seeing anything specifically at Arena? Like you said, fell in love with theater, but what were some of the ones you watched when you were growing up? Do you remember?
Completely. It was a lot of the Arthur Miller, you know, from sort of the great American canon, but it was Robert Prosky doing Death of a Salesman or All My Sons. And then he'd work with his son, who was a company member and a regular player at Arena Stage as well. And those things just blew my mind. I just couldn't believe that's the way you could spend a life and make a living. Yeah, for sure. And I knew the sort of legend of Zelda Fitchhandler and what she meant to the American theater movement, the regional theater movement, and the profound impact she had in Washington, D.C. And then, you know, Molly Smith came along and carry the torch, and the new facility is, that's the other thing I should have mentioned for audiences. If you have not been to the Arena Stage, I had my mind blown because I hadn't seen it in years. It is such an impressive facility. The new architecture and the setup there is really phenomenal.
Yes, absolutely. And come bid farewell to Molly. We're interviewing her later this week. I know she's
right on,
hanging it up after all these years, but always a great
force.
So many great. Yeah. I mean, come on. We'll go down in the annals of U.S. theater history.
Totally.
Great. Well, I don't, if you can't tell, I could sit and freaking talk to you and pick your brain all day. I would love,
love to hear it.
What other, do you have any advice for any of our listeners who are in this area and, you know, and want to make the leap to Hollywood?
Yeah, I think it's really, you know, the good news these days is it matters less where you are because the world virtually has opened up in a way because of the pandemic. And I do think it's something that is a big message from the show in terms of holding on to yourself. If you are committed to your voice and the thing you're making, it will find its way. And I know that's sort of vague, but I think it's I'm so impressed by people, you know, Tony Nam, who's in our cast, who's a local guy who has never really, he left for grad school. He just works here in Baltimore with Everyman in an Arena. And he is just as good as anyone I've ever worked with. And I sort of feel like that's the trick, is it doesn't really matter where you're doing it. Like I think the quality rises. So I don't have any shortcut or sort of silver bullet for, hey, here's the ticket. But I do think it is like anything else. Nothing replaces the investment of time and hard work. You know, I think that's the ticket.
Well, you put in the hard work and the time, and we're excited to see the work that you and the rest of the cast, Tony Nam and Caroline and everybody else, at Exclusion. It's going to be at Arena Stage now through June 25th. So get your tickets now. Thanks so much. This was so much fun.
Hey, it was phenomenal. I'm really grateful you had me on, and keep up the good work. Thanks so much.